Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
Today, we have a very special guest. She was actually the one that helped me come up with the idea for this podcast.
And This award-winning podcast. We have to mention it every time. We have to get our money's worth.
We have to mention it for at least the next...
I will milk it forever.
345 days until the next...
Minimum.
Cleveland Comedy Awards. Ms. Camilla Grigsby, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Your default setting is overthinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm overthinking things right now.
Yeah, don't do that. Please don't.
I know. I'm very afraid that I'm going to shut down and just, like, be silent for the next hour.
We won't allow you. We will drag it out of you.
If you curl up in a ball, we'll keep talking at you.
Yeah, we will. We'll keep yelling and pointing. And then,
and then
eventually, what's nice is eventually we'll just stop talking about your default setting and we'll talk about your cats. And then you'll open up and it'll be fine. Yeah. We'll just talk about the things that you're comfortable with, ultimately. Overthinking, I feel like... I've got it so bad. It is ultimately why I drink and I smoke weed, because that turns off the voice that's like, what is he thinking? What is going on?
You gotta crank down the overthinking, and it just goes hands in hands with the inhibitions, I guess. So
yes,
all the stuff, it's like, you turn down your inhibitions, and I'm like, oh, is this what normal people feel like? This is what it feels to just be like a regular functioning human.
I've never been able to get there, though. I've never been able to get to a point where I'm not overthinking.
Okay.
Well, so, that's a good and bad thing, because that means that you probably won't turn to alcoholism or anything.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, like, I can't do weed because it makes me crazy paranoid.
Yeah.
Which makes me even more overthinky, and I'm a delight. Drinking-wise, I don't know. I don't know if drinking calms it at all. I think drinking just makes me more, like, I feel like I think I'm more fun and funny when I'm drunk. Mm. So,
I feel that's a pretty common thing. But then that's it. But then, I guess with me, sometimes I feel that way, and I think it's because I've, like, loosened up a little bit. And so I'm not thinking about, like, every word that comes out of my mouth, which is good and bad sometimes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, great with time to put your foot in your mouth, but you could also make some great jokes. So
true.
Well, that's it, because like as stand-up comedians, it's one of those things that if you overthink, you will bomb, you will destroy yourself every single time.
Sure.
I think the advantages there, and there are many, I think, to overthinking, are that you're self-aware, which is a huge piece, right? Like,
right. Too self-aware, maybe, but
yes, self-aware all the same. Self-aware.
Yes, but you're never that douchebag that's oblivious to how they're being, right? Like,
yeah.
No.
You always smell nice. You have your shit.
But then the other people always annoy me, the people who aren't like that. I was just like, why don't you take some of my crazy and put it on yourself, because you're acting like a real dick.
Here's some crazy for you.
Well, right, and then you kind of push those expectations on other people, because I think part of the overthinking is, like, always coming super prepared for something, mm-hmm. you know, like, super prepared, always early, always on time, and then, like you said, Elizabeth, like, when somebody shows up and they're late or they're not prepared, like, what the fuck?
Yep.
What, you know, why?
I've been freaking out. What have you been doing? Nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
So, when would you say you first had the realization that, like, maybe you are spending too much time dwelling on certain things?
You know, I don't think I really became self-aware until I was in my mid to late 30s. So, like, recently. I'm an only child. So I think as an only child, you grow up with, you grow up, I think, a lot more self-centered than other people do. And like, and especially for me, like in my, are you an only child too? Is that what you were going to say? Or
oh, no. I was going to say, it makes sense because I mean, you don't have to share, like you have two adults' attentions, you know, or grandma and all, like all those people all the time. Like, why wouldn't you be self-centered?
Yeah. So like, I mean, I spent a lot of my formative years of my childhood just kind of on my own, doing my own thing. And like, I was a weird kid. And like, you know, you just kind of learned that focus, I think, growing up. And yeah, I mean, and I didn't really start to, it almost came out, I didn't really start to think about other people until very recently, but I don't really mean it that way. You know, you just don't really start to like, I don't know, you just don't really start to think outside yourself until a certain point. And some people never get there, I guess.
I've met them.
I've met
them. No, like I said, it makes sense a lot because like, so I'm one of like four kids, and so it's always, you're like worrying about other people, not worrying, but you have to be aware of them and yourself, and you have to share and do all that kind of stuff. So I don't always get along super well with only children, I found, but not all of them.
No.
Like there's some, like there was a kid in who lived at college and so, with us, like in a house, and he'd just like leave all his shit in the like the common space, all the room all the time. It drove me crazy. I'm like, this isn't yours. This is a common space. This isn't about you. This is not your closet.
Yeah.
It drove me crazy.
I was that person when I lived with roommates.
Oh, sure. Really?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I've known you for, you know, 10-ish roughly years from Twitter, weirdly, I think is probably what it was.
Social media.
Yeah. And I do say, like, from what I've gotten from you, you definitely don't give yourself enough credit. Because one of the things I find, another reason Camilla and I get along so well is because she's incredibly funny. Like, she's absolutely hysterical. And I think it takes a great amount of, like, being able to observe and being able to be sort of introspective. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably been around longer. I mean, do you have, like, a defining moment where you remember, you're like, maybe I should think more about this, it sounds like? Did you kind of switched a little bit where you were more conscious of, you know, maybe thinking about things more?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I think I think it's more of a gradual thing. One thing is like, I think I've become aware that, and this also sounds pretty sociopathic, but like that other people have the same feelings I do.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like just kind of like going through time and like, you know, experiencing things with people and just like, oh, I'm not the only person that feels that way. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't really a defining moment. I did have a defining moment when I was in college. I was like being very mopey to a friend and like, really hung up on a lot of stuff from my past. And I was like, I had a really rough childhood. And he was like, Camilla, everyone had a rough childhood. Shut up. And I mean, that was years and years ago. But I mean, that's always stuck with me. Like the shit that you kind of bring with you through life is no different from the shit other people are carrying.
Absolutely.
It's part of like just kind of basic empathy that seems to be very lacking in society these days.
Oh,
but, you know, I mean, you know, just kind of realizing that everyone's carrying some sort of shit around that's not great.
Right.
And I feel like social media and stuff has both, like, helped and hurt that because, you know, like, people post it and you're like, damn, that's really shitty. You know, something bad happens or, you know, they make a post about how they're dealing with depression or something. We're like, oh, you too? Like, I didn't realize that. But then other times, then you have the other side of like people commenting and just posting douchey shit with like the anonymity. Yeah. Like, you're not a person, you're a computer. So it's like, you know,
Like the pile on of grief when a celebrity dies. Like, who can be the first to like feel the saddest about David Bowie?
No, he meant so much to me.
And then you get the guys who jump in. That's like, who even cares? No one even talked about this person before they died.
Yeah, gotta have that guy. Well, it's like all that Game of Thrones shit. Like, there's all these. There's the people who talk about it, and then there's the people who bitch about people talking about it. Like, why would you bitch? Like, you don't watch Game of Thrones. You think you're better than other people, or you just don't care, but like do a better job at not caring.
So okay, right. So this is a topic that is very near to my heart. So here's the thing. So, and again, you are right. There are definitely people that exist in that regard. So I've been really actually because of the Marvel comic universe and because of Game of Thrones. These are two things that I actually tried, because that's the thing. I have tried. People are very quick to be like, well, if you actually gave it a shot and what? No, I've watched many episodes of Game of Thrones. I have seen many times, because my boyfriend loves both, and I will be sitting in the room and he will be watching. He's watched Endgame at least twice when I've been in the room. And it's fine. It's all fine. Like, I don't hate it. It's just not for me, right?
Yeah.
So the thing that I want to, like, break down is just the process of what I see happening with that whole thing, which is someone, you know, basically both of these things have permeated the zeitgeist. Like, they're completely ubiquitous, and it's my experience that the vast majority of my friend base, this is the one place where, like, we don't overlap in our interests. And so it can feel alienating, right? Like, it can feel alienating when, like, almost what literally feels like all of your friends are talking about these two things and you don't know what they're talking about. So my instinct is just to be like, hey, I've never watched this. And I put that out there from the perspective, not to say, like, your thing sucks, but to put it out there as, like, is there anybody else feeling this way? Is there anybody else feeling like, because I just don't see anybody else not talking about this.
Yeah, well, that's, I think that's different from other people who post, like, stop posting about it. Who cares? It's just like, well, you clearly care because shut up.
because shut up.
You're compounding things. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, how is that going to make anything better? Like, if you don't care, fine. Like, and if, like you said, like putting it out there like that, that seems something totally different. But the people who put it out there, it seems like a lot of times they put it out there like, I'm cool because I don't care.
It's Maggie. I see a Maggie.
Aww,
it's a Maginal Grigsby.
Hi, kitty.
It's Maginal Grigsby.
Black and white kitty.
She has a...
That's going to make for good podcast.
Yeah, no, this is every
episode.
Well,
I tried to say black and white kitty.
This is every episode. My cat decided to go. Every episode, someone's pet shows up, and we spend like 30 seconds going...
And then
usually what we'll do is we'll just make that like the image for the podcast that week. It's like the person holding their animal. So that way they can at least see what the hell's going on. Although
here's a kitty for everyone.
Maginal, you can't see it, but she has a goatee. Like, it's like a little
soul patch.
A little soul patch. Yeah, she has like a little soul patch.
Over kind of like slightly lidded eyes. And she's just like, okay, great.
I know. Evan, I'm still. I'll warn you. Every once in a while, if you see me do this, it's because the cats are on the porch, and so I'm always like making sure that no one's flying off the porch. Yeah, because we're on the second floor, so.
Yeah, that's a concern for sure.
Zoe the puppy is just snoring away next to me.
I can't hear her. That's good.
No, I can't hear her.
She's just wheezed a little bit. She's just like slowly inched closer to me.
Aww.
She's so cute. She's got the saddest eyes though, and she just stares. Aww. And I'm like, I don't know what you want. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Please take a nap so I don't feel guilty.
Just please shut your eyes, because that makes me feel.
I'll start giving her Benadryl or something.
I drug my
not
dog.
Not really. I will not drug an animal.
Disclaimer. We are just kidding.
Yeah. No, she's got her knee hurts or something though. Aww. So she's got a little limp thing going on. So I tried to take her for a walk, but she walks so slow and it looks so sad. I'm like,
maybe you could just
don't
maybe
be here.
If you had a cup, you could just be like, change, like with your limping dog.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Change, sir. Change, ma'am. That's
opportunity.
That's how people do it out here in LA.
I gotta pay these student loans.
I don't look twice at most homeless people, and then they fucking figure it out if they have an animal. It doesn't matter what it is. Any animal, my heart just goes, psh, and then I'm just my wallet. I'm like, here, just take it all. Like, I just jump. Like,
screw you if you're trying to feed yourself as a human being, but now you have to feed a puppy.
Oh, when I was downtown, this is the saddest thing that's ever happened. Is I made the mistake the first time I went downtown. I think I told you this. I was super high. And that's not good, because just like you were talking about, it made me ultra paranoid, and that's not good when, you know, you're surrounded by potentially sketchy situations. But there was a woman who she was in a wheelchair, and she had this big fluffy cat that looked like Smithers, and then she had like a little puppy sitting in her lap in the wheelchair, and she was like, please give me some money, I need food for my pets and it's Thanksgiving soon. And I was like, ah! Like, I just literally lost my mind. Like, I literally, like,
you're like, you have Venmo?
Yeah. And like, I just remember the rest of the night I was super upset. I think we even went home early because I was like, I can't deal with this. So hopefully you didn't run into anything like that when you were downtown.
Nobody talked to me.
Good. That's
amazing. No.
Yeah.
I'm like, I kind of have a very East Coast perspective in cities. Like, I no eye contact, don't talk to people. Like, no one's my friend. So, yeah.
Keep your shit on all your inside pockets.
Yeah. Yeah. But people in LA were such slow walkers.
Really?
Yeah. Slow walkers.
Okay.
And I'm a fast walker.
What are they, just enjoying the weather or something? Yeah, like, get out of here.
Stop enjoying things.
You don't have places to be? What is it? What is that? A tree with flowers? Go fuck yourself.
Stop fuck enjoying you. Things. I wish you could have spent more time out here, because I know you said that was your first time visiting.
Yeah. I'll come back sometime. I mean, I thought, you know, I enjoyed downtown LA, the little I got to see of it.
Yeah.
I didn't get to do anything fun, really, besides have dinner with you. But, like, yeah, I mean, I'd like to see kind of not just downtown.
Yeah.
You know,
there's more
experience
to it. Yeah, there's more to it.
Yeah, of course.
It sounds very much like what happened is you went from, like, 0 to 60 in terms of, like, oh, other people think and feel the same things. And then was it sort of, like, almost a sense of, oh, I really have to try. You know what I mean? Almost, like, guilt, sort of, like, I have to try harder to be aware because I wasn't for so long.
No.
Okay.
No. No. I mean, I think there's still a part of me that's not, like, I mean, I get it, but, like, there's, like, the realist part that's, like, everyone else is still an asshole. So, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you can be, not that I would say that I'm 100% self-aware, but, like, you know that people are operating on different levels of self-awareness.
Sure.
And, like, you can't really fight it.
Yeah.
You can't, like, you can't reason with a Trump voter, for example.
Oh, yeah. I think you know, it's a new level of consciousness when you realize that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I respect people who are just like, yeah, there's no point to that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Well, it's like when you realize what's worth spending your time on and what isn't. Like,
right, exactly.
You're going to throw in the towel and have peace of mind and stuff going like, I have to be right and everyone needs to know it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, fuck right. It. They're wrong in my opinion, but I don't care.
Right. Just know that you're right and live with that sense of smugness, which I guess is probably another default setting. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And you know? People can definitely have secondary default settings, for sure.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
We contain multitudes. Yeah,
overthinker and self-righteousness, whatever.
Well, and that kind of seem like, they seem like oppositional in a way, right? Because, like, on one hand, like, you're like, oh, you know, you're thinking too much about, like, not just how you are, but maybe, do you find it's not even self-specific? Do you find it's also about, like, tactical? Like, do you overthink?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, like, every aspect of life, like, you know, both, like, how am I going to look when I go to this meeting? And, like, you know, yeah, just kind of navigating anything that comes up in life or, like, what other people are going to do, you know? Yeah.
Do you wish you spent less time on things because of the fact that you overthink? I mean, is it something you want to fix, or is it just kind of like, no, I'm glad that this is a thing that I have?
I don't know. I feel like I feel like once you get to a certain age, like, it's still possible to change things about yourself, but it's not really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that there's, like, coping techniques or, like, meditation or, like, you know, kind of tamping yourself down that I could work on, but, like, I don't know. I mean, it is kind of what keeps me going, and it's what keeps me, like, I'm a bad procrastinator in other senses. So, like, you know, I mean, I feel like if I don't overthink things, if I'm not like, okay, what's next, I wouldn't get anything done. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in some ways it's a good coping mechanism. I don't know. I mean, it has positives and negatives, I think.
Yeah. Does it put a strain on, like, relationships and things like that? Have you found, like, or is it pretty...
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
That's good.
I mean, it would be interesting to ask people in my life if they think so.
Yeah.
I think it kind of goes back to that sense of, like, superiority. Like, you can't get your shit together. But, like, I thought so much about it. Look at me. Very smug.
I love that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my thing is, like, at least the people... I guess the people I'm closest to, I don't really overthink about unless I'm high. And then I'm just like, literally yesterday I was so high and like, my boyfriend was like, "You're quiet. What's going on? Why are you quiet, Adam?
Why are you quiet?
Are you mad? Are you hangry? Are you what's going on?"
That's when he knows there's a problem.
Yeah, I'm like, "What's going on? And that's it. Like, I kept asking him, like, "Is everything okay?" And I feel bad because especially when I'm high, just like I'm just like, "Oh, he's being quiet. Oh, he's making a face. Oh, he's doing, you know, like all this shit."
This means he hates me.
Right? He secretly hates me. He's mad at me. And like with. Right now, he just walked past, and I made a face at him. Like, he, you know, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. But, like, in situations where I'm not super close with somebody, and that's kind of what I like about having people like us. Like, I feel this is, like, I'm hitting my stride because, like, even if I were high right now talking to you guys, like, I would just be, like, comfortable, and this is cool. When I'm literally just meeting someone for the first time, I'm like, oh, my God, am I talking too much? Am I being too loud? Am I scaring them off? Am I being weird? Like, I don't know if you find, like, it changes depending on who the person is.
Yeah, totally, okay. For sure. I mean, yeah, new people, like, this is the first time I've met you, Elizabeth. If we were in person, I would be, like, questioning everything that came out of my mouth. I'm like, does she think that I'm talking too much? Does she think I'm not talking enough? You know, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely different with people you don't know than with people you're comfortable okay. with. Like, I mean, you know, we were talking about, I think before we started recording, about the improv class I've been taking and how it's like super out of my comfort zone. And like, you know, I don't think I'm very good at it, but like there are certain friends in my life where when we get together, it's like one ongoing improv sketch. So like, you know, like I know I have it in me, like when it's somebody I'm very comfortable with and I kind of know what to expect from them, but that's also not the point of improv. So,
right.
You know, like, yeah, like it's kind of breaking that wall, that I haven't.
I totally understand what you're saying. Cause that's it. Once you break through, you stop thinking, right? Like you're just you, you're yourself.
Yeah. Which is you're supposed to do.
Exactly. But that's it. You have to be able to get to the point of breaking through the wall, and that's where substance abuse comes into play for me. but obviously that's not a crutch. So, you know, you gotta, and I think the wall is different for everybody too. How long have you been taking the improv classes?
Like 6 weeks.
Okay. So yeah, still new.
Yeah.
You just started.
Yeah.
And I mean, is it every week or?
It's every week. It's actually our last class is this Thursday.
Okay.
And I'm thinking after this ends, like, I don't know. I think you probably also have to find like the right mix of people and, you know,
a good teacher and stuff.
Yeah, good teacher. And the teacher's really good, but like, I don't know. I'm curious about other things that are out there now. So I've started to do some research on other classes.
Oh yeah. Like what?
Area.
Like what?
Yeah. There's an acting school in Coventry. I live in Cleveland Heights.
Oh, that's
so
perfect
on the
for
side
you.
Of
yeah.
Cleveland. So yeah. So there's an acting school there, although they seem like super like, professional.
Okay.
They do improv classes though, so that might be something interesting to try. And I don't know. I mean, that's kind of where I've gotten so far.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I love hearing about like people taking classes and like trying new things and new skills, even like as adults.
Because even as old people.
Yeah. No, it's just as adults in general. But they're not just like, well, I like everything that I like, and I'm just gonna be good. Like I'm not gonna try anything new. Or especially, I think people aren't always comfortable going back into like a classroom setting or like a situation after they feel like they did their time or, you know, maybe they didn't love it, but I don't know. I just think it's cool. I wish everybody got to do that.
I like taking classes. Like school was one thing that I was really good at. I don't know. I think maybe I thrive with kind of structured praise and structured success.
Oh, really?
Even when it's not success. Like I took a sewing class this winter. Like there's a workshop pretty close to my house where she does like learn how to use a sewing machine, do a macrame planter, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I'm going to learn how to use a sewing machine. And I was the worst person in the class. Like it was the last person there. I couldn't get a stitch right. My bag looks like shit. But, like, I don't know. It was kind of fun to still be there and to, like, have attention because I was bad at it, you know? I think it's a good thing to keep learning and to try new things and, you know, keep your brain stimulated as you age.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me happy that you're cultivating a little bit that side because I remember you and I got together right after I did stand up, and I was like, "You gotta do stand up." She's literally one of the funniest people. Like, stand-up for me, like, you were talking about there's an acting class in the East Side, which I kind of wish I had known, or maybe I wish that I had, I mean, maybe it didn't exist when I started looking 3 years ago. when I was looking for my creative outlet, like, stand-up was pretty much all Cleveland had to offer at that point. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it became a thing for me. But in the last almost year out here, I'm realizing, like, it's not necessarily standing up in front of a group of people and saying, please think I'm funny, that is what was the right outlet for me. Ultimately, because it kind of goes back to the thing we're talking about, the level of, like, you want attention. Although, for you, it sounds like even bad attention is fine, you know, to a degree, you know what I mean? At least from the sewing perspective, you were saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, like...
Maybe not, like, bad attention, but, like...
I crave attention.
Okay, me too.
Only child. Yeah. Crave attention, but I also really hate it. Like,
okay.
Like, it's very hard for me to take compliments. It's very hard for me to, like, my friends threw a surprise party for me when I turned 30. Aww. And, like, my two girlfriends picked me up under the auspices that we were going out to dinner together. And we went back, they made up a scenario where we had to go back to the one girl's apartment and blah, blah, blah. And we walked in and everybody jumps out and is like, surprise! And I was like, are we still going to Momocho? Like, that was the first thing out of my mouth because I was really excited about getting Mexican food. And I think there's a big part of me that wants that attention and wants people to notice that I'm really funny and great and blah, blah, blah. And there's another part of me that's like, just don't look at me. No.
Do you find, and this is probably, I probably can guess that the answer is no, but because I also run in circles with stand-up comedians, do you find sometimes you have an easier time handling negative attention than positive attention?
I don't know. I don't think I get a lot of negative. Okay. What would you cite as an example of negative attention?
Well, so, okay. So for comedians, this is what I find. A lot of them thrive on, like, they try to be edgelords, right? Because they can't really come up with a great joke, but they want the attention, and they know that they're gonna trigger somebody. And
like people who poo-poo Game of Thrones and the Avengers.
Yeah, there you go.
They're really, really nasty about it. Not just like, I feel left out. Is anybody else feeling this way? But, like, legitimately, like, shitting on things people love, right?
Yeah. Like, just because that is it. It seems like they just want... they're trying to pick a fight, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's those people. I think also another thing comedians, even good comedians, often thrive on is like bombing and like just people like crowds being assholes. Cause you know, I feel like it kind of ups their sort of ante.
Yeah. No, I think I would hate that.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I want people to like me.
Yeah.
I don't thrive on bombing. I don't want it.
Me neither. Yeah. Me neither. And that's another.
No.
Thank you.
And that's another reason I figured out. Yeah. I was like, oh, wait, acting. I can get up in front of a class full of people and just eat shit. And people still have to be like, yay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah. No one can throw a battery at you. Like, that's not acceptable behavior when you're acting.
Has someone thrown a battery at
you? Yeah. Not an acting.
Really?
Not an acting class, but
right,
on stage.
Right, in stand-up, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that was the oft-discussed Avenue Tap House showcase that we ran out on the left side.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
That was a whole can of diddly. But yes, so,
good times.
Yeah, so, but I mean,
wow.
Yeah, it was real rough. That was the same night Spider got a shot glass thrown at him. So, yeah, it just kind of all fell apart. but... yeah, so I mean, that's good. That's interesting to know that it sounds like for you, it's either ultimately it kind of sounds like, you know, you're either going for, if you're not going to praise me, give me no attention. Does that seem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's perfect.
Okay. Yep. And
I know exactly what you mean though. Like the whole, like, you love but hate attention. It's just like, oh, I want people to be interested or like want to talk to me and stuff. But at the same time, I'm like, oh God, now I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. It's like, I have to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say something stupid. And then that's just the overthinking cycling. I'm just like, pay attention. Oh God. But what if I fuck it up?
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
I ruined it.
You're so right, though. Like, just in the last 5 years, I've had this realization where if I strike up a conversation with somebody, in my head, I'm like, oh no, now I have to keep this going, and I have to think of things to talk about.
Yeah.
I wanted something. I'm not sure I can finish.
That's the worst part of starting a conversation with somebody, like at a networking event or like thinking about work. Like,
I never know how to walk away.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, uh-huh. And then I feel like I just ruin it all by awkwardly going like.
Yeah. Has anyone ever just walked away from you? Not,
and then just like, I'm going to go over there now, I guess.
Yeah. But has anyone ever just kind of like in one of those conversations, just like, you know, you reach the end and they just kind of wander away? Because that's happened to me for sure. Yep. Like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had someone do it. Like one time I was going to a thing before I started my master's program, and it was like a little networky thing. And I mean, designers in general are pretty arrogant and not the best. But I was talking to the one guy from the program, and then I was like, oh, hey, you know, like you said, we should come to this thing. And so I did, and we were talking, and then he's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go over here now. Like, he said it to me like that. And I was like, I didn't realize I trapped you. Like, I was just, you told me to come, and so I introduced myself, but that's all. Like, I wasn't trying to fucking hold your hand or something. Like, what? I don't know what happened, and in his head, I was like, okay, I want to feel bad for myself about it, because I'm like, okay, I was so awkward, and I must have made this, but at the same time, I'm like, well, maybe you were shit at it. Like,
yeah. Right.
Because the way you said it just made it seem like, okay, I'm going to go crazy, like back up. And I was like, I said my name, and I was like, oh, so excited to see the thing and for it to get started. And he's just like,
I always think of this.
Motherfucker.
There's a hyperbole and a half. Do you guys read Hyperbole and a Half?
Oh my God. I love
it. Yeah.
It's so funny.
So good. But she had, this is one I think about all the time. And it's literally like, I don't even know if she drew a comic or she was just writing about it in her blog, but she's like, that moment when the conversation dies down, like just goes to a silence, and you were the last person that talked, so everybody feels like it's your fault the conversation died out. You know what I mean? Like, I have that all the time.
Or you feel like it's your fault. You're like, oh my God, yeah, that was so good.
I know, and then you just immediately, because you're the last person to say something by default, you're like, oh, it's my fault. Like, clearly I killed this conversation with whatever stupid thing I just said.
Yeah.
When really, in everybody's mind, the same they're all doing the same thing you're doing.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Again, you are not special. Right.
I know, and that's such a great way to put it, because it's like, there's something so self-absorbed in being self-conscious as well, right? Like, when you're worried that you're fucking everything up, like, there's a humility to that, but also there's like, you're giving yourself way more credit for like...
Yeah, like thinking whatever you're contributing or not contributing is enough to like fuck up everyone's life or like their good time.
Right.
Like, okay, that's dumb.
Exactly.
That's just...
Yeah, and that's...
I feel that.
My daily mantra I have to try and remind myself is like, it's not about you, you know what I mean? Or like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or that's so when some people have like with that interaction I was talking about, like it probably had nothing to do with me, but I was already like nervous about going and like meeting these people, and you know, they're uppity.
Guys, I really want to show you what's going on the patio right now, but as soon as I turn the camera around, you're not going to see it. And there's like this stack of like containers that kind of just like are out on our patio. So Smeef is on the highest one, and then Soma jumped up to like one of the lower levels, and it's literally like, it almost kind of looks like Romeo and Juliet right now. Smeef's up really high, and Soma's just like do it, like reaching for her, and like it's just I'm dying of cute exposure right now. It is the cutest. It's the cutest.
That sounds amazing.
Yes.
Zoe was having a dream over here, and her legs were twitching. Doing a little old dream run
baby
thing.
Girl, how are your babies doing? You have Maggie and Charlotte.
I do. They're great. Maggie had a little too much of me a moment ago, and she bit me while I was petting her.
Are you okay?
Oh yeah, she just nips. She tells me she's had enough, so I moved into the other room from her. I don't know where Charlotte is. Charlotte's been doing this thing recently. Well, really, for a while where she sits like a people and she has her own hashtag on Instagram.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just her cleaning herself, you know, like cats do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
she's sitting like a people.
Sometimes she legitimately just sits like that.
I had a cat who would do that too, or she'd do the chicken leg thing where she'd lay on her stomach, but her back legs are just straight out.
Yeah.
We used to call it chicken legs.
That's perfect. That's exactly chicken what legs. It looks like. Yeah. But they're good. They're living their best lives.
That's good. I forget, is Maggie the testy one, or is Charlotte, are they both testy?
No, Charlotte's a testy one. So Maggie is a little princess. We got her from the APL when she was a kitten. She's never lived outside. She's never had any struggle other than whatever happened to her in the first 3 or 4 months of her life before she ended up at the APL. Charlotte is, she was a feral kitten. I found her on the streets of Collinwood. There's a big colony of feral cats there, and she was part of that colony. And I was coming out of dinner at a restaurant in Collinwood with some friends one night, and this little kitten comes running up to me, and like she basically climbed onto my shoulder, and she had these little thumbs. She's a polydactyl. And I was like, I have to take this cat home. And my friends were like,
she chose you.
She chose me. And she was a very nice little kitten, and she's just gotten more and more ornery as she's gotten older. She doesn't really like me as much as she likes my husband. She really bonded with my husband when he came into my life. And even then it's kind of a tenuous love. It's like, okay, you can pick me up, but I'm going to like yell at you and I'm not really going to like it, although I do.
I heard some of those, if a cat's like, so if they've been living in that colony and if it's like been even like a generation or two, like the feralness is kind of, I don't know, starts to get kind of like bred back in. So like a genetic personality thing. I could be totally wrong.
No, you're right. She's very fearful. She's afraid of everything. Although she, you know, puts on a really tough front.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you've had her since she was like a little baby, like she's still.
Yeah. She still wants to be a wildcat, even though she is like terrified of going outside. Maggie's the one who will like try to run out the door when we open it.
Oh my gosh.
Stand in the driveway, hide under a car.
Oh no.
Because she doesn't know what to do when she gets outside. She's
my
like,
cat was like that. I had a cat when I was a kid, and she's this black and white cat, and she was so cute. And my brother's cat would get out all the time. And then my cat would be like, oh, okay, I guess I'm trying to get outside because that's what all the cool cats are doing. Like, that's what I'm supposed to do. But every single time she'd get out, she's at the back of the house, crying until I just come and pick her up.
She's just
sitting back there crying, and then I walk around to the back of the house and to pick her up, and I'm like, why do you do this every don't like it out here?
Right, exactly.
You just think you want to be out here.
Right.
It's a metaphor for all of us where, like, we crave freedom, but then once we have it, we don't know what to do with it, you know? Like, it's too much. It's too much.
Right.
I don't know.
Or attention or anything that we crave.
That's a great point. Bringing it back around. Like, you know, you ask for attention, you get it, and then you're like, I don't know what to do.
Rewind.
This is not the exact amount of attention that I wanted. Because that's me, too. Like, I want attention, but then, like, only from, like, a limited group. You know what I mean? Like, this is good. Like, this works. Or, like, even, like, 5 or 6 people is great. Yeah. Then you're in front of a room, and you're like, no, that's too much.
Yeah.
That's way too much. Too much attention, which is probably bad for being an actor. Something I need to get the fuck over. But, again, substance abuse. This episode.
Jess, are you good at, like, okay, so one thing that I have found is I've been in my current job for a couple of years, and one of the things I do a lot of in this job that I never did in my career before I started it is, like, doing presentations and doing, like, you know, group meetings and that sort of thing. And, like, I would have never, like, in my old career been like, oh, I really like giving presentations to, like, 50 people. But now I really do. Like, I don't mind it. Can kind of turn it off. Do you find that you can, like, do that? Like, is that kind of easy, or
it's
hard?
It's so interesting you bring that up.
Acting is.
So this is the thing. With my job that I have now, I only have to do training about once a month. But when I do it, I noticed, like, the first couple months that I did it, I didn't know everybody. And so The other thing is, too, I train legal secretaries, which I don't know if you've experienced this at all. Legal secretaries are mean. Like, and they're,
yeah.
And they're,
oh, yeah.
They're mean.
Well, I guess they're dealing with all the lawyers.
Exactly.
Being mean.
They're mean for a reason. They're not just mean to be mean. They have bullshit. Like, they get bullshit thrown at them, but then you get,
but,
you're on.
I think
and then
some they are mean just to
some
be mean.
Are just mean.
Okay. You know, well, it's right. Probably that. But right. Then they just project it
and
out.
I think, like, you have to be, like, you have to be cut mean to deal with the bullshit that attorneys can throw at you.
For sure.
But then, as someone who supports legal secretaries, you're on the receiving end of a lot of that, like, rage. And the thing is, I will say, at this firm specifically, the secretaries are much nicer than they were at my last firm by, like, 100 trillion. Well, Tucker Ellis has a reputation for having the meanest secretaries, and that's a whole other...
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've heard that from...
Why?
I don't know. I used to...
That's interesting.
Right? That's because I've culture. Trained... So I've had secretaries come from Baker. I've had secretaries come from Tom Lozier. I've had secretaries come from Jones Day. I've had secretaries come from, like, big firms all over the city who, like, my ex-husband works for Han Lozier, and he would always tell me when I started working at Tucker Ellis, like, oh, they're going to eat you alive. But Tucker Ellis overall, Tucker Ellis as attorneys go, has a very strict, like, no asshole policy. Like, they are very nice attorneys, and the managing partner will take you aside if you're an asshole and say, look, that's not how we do shit here, and I don't care if you're a partner or not. Like, you can go to another firm. I don't care. Like, you need to be a decent person. And that was the thing. Like, so Tucker Ellis has a reputation of, like, the attorneys and the management are extremely, like, you know, on it. But I don't know what it is about if, and it's not even, like, mean, like, they're not angry. They're, like, catty. You know what I mean? Like, they have a reputation for being really catty. Because, like I said, I would have other secretaries come in from other firms, and they would actually take me aside and say, like, you know, just so you know, like, they would tell me a lot of times, like, they're talking shit about you. They would actually, like, tell me, like, secretaries are talking shit about you. And number two, like, but don't feel bad because they talk shit about me. They talk shit about each other. They just sit around and talk shit all day long.
So you just spit right in.
Well, and what I think it was, two, they had a lot of free time, I think is what it was, because, like, there was, I think we had a few more secretaries than we actually needed to support the amount of attorneys we had. And so what ended up happening was they just had a conceivable amount of free time just to sit around and, you know, cluck about whatever was going on.
Cluck.
So,
they do. They cluck.
Yeah, they absolutely cluck. And and so with this firm, like, this firm has a, like, across the board, no asshole policy. And I think that trickles down a lot in the perspective of, you know, the attorneys are nice, so the secretaries are just a little bit. But I mean, that said, I just think secretaries by nature have, like, a little bit of just, like, what are you trying to pull? Like, just demeanor. And so to bring it.
Well, they're the, like, the bouncers.
Right. And so so then when I would go up to do presentations the first couple of times, and I'd look out over the sea of faces that are just like.
Going to try to tell me.
Right. That's when I kind of, like, started to be like, ah, fuck, I don't know why I thought I was good at this. But now that everybody knows me, now that everybody, like, I know likes me and actually values me for sure, I go up there and I'm just like,
hey, guys, let's get it done.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, and then that translates even more to, like, they feel comfortable, they're happy, they're relaxed. So to your point, long story made much longer than it needed to be. but I do think we needed to acknowledge that legal secretaries are mean.
They are.
It is a PSA. It is an important thing to know that legal secretaries are mean.
I mean, you guys, I'm not in that industry at all. So I would have never known.
Yes. Not all of them, but they can be mean.
Now I can tell others.
In particular, the ones that have been in the career for, like, 30 plus years.
Well, okay.
They take no nonsense, and they give no shits.
Yep.
And they don't like younger women.
Nope.
And
especially when the younger women come in with turquoise hair. They really didn't like that at all. They were not a fan of that.
Right.
But the point remains that, yes, I actually really fucking enjoy now being in front of them, training. I don't know what it is. I love sort of having this knowledge that they really want and being able to deliver it to them. And just, I don't know what your experience with that is at all.
Well, like, my experience in my current job has been like the environment, I'm not in law firms anymore, but the environment I'm in is pretty, like, kind of academic, and, like, people are thoughtful and, like, you know, they ask good questions and like they're actually engaged with what you're talking about.
Well,
so I think it super helps. Like it super helps if people are at least trying to be interested in what you're talking about. But like, you know, but you still have like, I still have in presentations where people are like typing away on their computers or like looking at their cell phones. And in some ways that's comforting to me to like know that people aren't paying attention. Cause if they're not paying attention to you, they, you know, they're not noticing you like, you know, umming and like, you know, forgetting what you're supposed to be talking about or like, you know, whatever weird speech tics you have. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's just gotten more comfortable because you realize that like everyone's kind of at the same place and in the same boat. And like, they want you to get through your 20-minute presentation so that they can go on break, you know? Yeah. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not like you're giving a speech for the Nobel Prize or like, you know, a State of the Union address or something. Yeah, right. It's not a competition and it's like what you're talking about is ultimately not that important. Mm-hmm. So why not just do it?
Have you ever looked out over the sea of faces and just seen people asleep, like straight up?
I have never seen anybody asleep. But, no, you know what I have? I've seen somebody kind of dozing.
Yeah, I see that. That's the one I see. Yeah.
Like, especially if it's, like, you're, like, going, like, right after lunch or, like, late afternoon. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just like, okay, fine, whatever. This is not super exciting to me either. I get it.
We try to do trainings every day at 10:30 just because of that, like, whole thing. But, oh, my God, like, and even, I mean, like, back at Tucker, even, like, you would just look out and, like, I would see at least one to two just, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sucks because I feel like I've been that person before too.
Oh, me too. And like, me too.
And we've I all just been that like, person. Well, I can't fight it. Like I'm bad at fighting it. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I feel like a piece of shit. Like, but I am trying real hard.
Yeah.
Usually when I have to like get up and like get some coffee.
But it's true. I mean, you make a great point because it's like then you realize, oh, no one's sitting there like scrutinizing me or wondering what I'm trying to pull.
Right.
They're just there because they have.
Yeah, no one's sitting there giving you a stink eye.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because you're giving them the information that they need, and that's the important part at the end.
Like, I don't know if either of you have ever noticed this. Something I realized about myself is, like, even mentally, like, now that when I do presentations, like, mentally I'm not nervous, I'm having, you know, a good time, everything's fine. Physiologically, and this even happens, like, doing this, physiologically, like, when I finish, I'll be, like, soaked in sweat. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Yeah.
I'm like, why am I sweating? I'm not even nervous, but I think my body is still just doing one of those things.
I think I feel like I've read something about, I mean, it's an involuntary thing. Like people's heart rates just kind of naturally increase when they're on the spot or when they're performing, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something that even like somebody who's super comfortable and super seasoned can't control. It just happens.
Well, it's like, so my best friend and I, we do, presentations. We've been doing them for like, oh God, over 10 years with, at anime conventions. Cause we're nerds. So we just started like our thing, we call it trial and error. And we just go to anime conventions and we put on panels. So we get our passes for free because we're providing entertainment and it's really fun. And like, we're making the content and like the people who show up are like the people that want to be there. We used to get like bummed, like if they see people like going in and going out or we're like, oh fuck, well, people left, I guess it's, you know, but at the same time, it's just like some people were just coming in to sit for a minute and you kind of forget about those things. And like in the end, it's, you know, some of them that we do are like, and more like informational, and other ones are just like, hey guys, let's get drunk and look at inappropriate pictures kinds of things, which is also super fun. And I find that like the more things that we're doing that are like satire or something, like the better it is, like the easier it is, because then I just get real sarcastic and dumb with it and like can go off book more. I get nervous a little more when I'm doing actually I don't know if that's true. I don't even get, like, nervous, but when you're giving out information and you're just waiting for some dick to, like, challenge you.
Oh. Yeah.
It doesn't, I guess it doesn't really happen that often anymore. It's definitely gotten easier, but I really like giving those presents. You know, like, we've been doing that and giving presentations in front of groups of, like, over 100 people, like, packed room. And it's really, I don't know, I think a lot of people find it scary, but it is really fun.
Well, especially if you're talking about something that you really, that you enjoy and that you like to talk about. I mean, that makes a big difference.
Or that you're an authority on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have, because you're giving that presentation because, you know more about it than other people and you're disseminating that information at that point, right? And
So it's like, so that probably helps you guys too, because if you've been into your job for a while and you've, or at least you know what you're talking about and you get to explain it to people, I guess that was kind of the point. It's like, I like helping people understand stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why that kind of attention feels really good.
Right.
Yeah. But
maybe that goes back to the smugness.
Well, no, I think that's more of an altruistic thing. Like, you're sharing your knowledge and
it can be
that
both.
Helps
like,
other people.
Much more positive. It can be both. Like, you can be like, great. Also, here's my stuff and I'm also great. Like, that's, I mean, it can be both. You know what I mean? You can be showing off. And that's, I think, like, performance is mostly just showing off, right? Like James was saying on our last episode or one of our two episodes ago, like, when you go up in front of a room, like, showing off is a lot of it, but ultimately you also have to know what it is you're doing. And I think for me, that's where the nervousness comes in performance, is there's the showy off part, which I'm totally for, and then there's the I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do when I get up here, or I have an idea, but I'm not really sure that that's what's gonna happen. I don't know if you found this at all. I think you alluded to it a little bit, Kamala, but doing acting, doing improv, doing performance, doing comedy, and Liz, you can kind of chime in on this too, because I think you've probably experienced this. You get in with a lot of these people who have been doing this kind of stuff since they could stand, right? Mm-hmm. And then you feel like, oh, fuck, am I ever going to know what I'm doing? Because they've been doing this, like, they're half my age, but they've been doing this twice as long, right? And I don't know if that ever feels like a sort of futile uphill battle of like, should I even continue when this person's been doing, you know, they went to school for this. They did, you know.
Yeah, it seems like they have such a leg up on you.
Yeah, I'm fairly new to it. I mean, like I said, I've only been doing improv classes for six weeks. So I don't have much of a basis for anything. My brother-in-law is an actor, and he's not currently working. I don't think he's in anything now. He's done a lot of extra work and, like, commercials and that sort of stuff. And, like, he's just so naturally good at being on stage. Like, he's done some fill-in work at the Beck Center over the past couple of years, and he was in one of the musicals maybe 2 years ago. And, like, that was the first time I'd ever seen him, like, perform on stage. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, so naturally good at it. Like, he's kind of like that, just, you know, interacting. Like, you know, if you met him, you would be like, this guy's an actor. You know, this guy is an entertainment in some capacity. So, like, you know, for somebody like him, it's like, yeah, definitely. Like, you've done this your whole life. You're just naturally good at it. It's who you are. And, like, you know, kind of, I mean, not that, like, I compare myself to my brother-in-law who's an actor, but, like, you know, it's still kind of like, I don't know that I could ever get to that.
Right.
Point. I don't know.
Like, you know, it's like, he's not the only one like that. It's like, there's so many people on that level. Like, is there even room for me?
Yeah, there? Exactly. You know? Even it's hard for somebody like him, who's very naturally talented. But, like, you know, I mean, you always hear people, like, women, especially in their 40s and 50s, say it gets harder to get roles. But, like, I think even he's found it hard as, like, a dude who's, I think he just turned 50, to, you know, find roles that are good for him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, and not that, like, I don't think that my goal with anything that I'm dipping my toe into is to ever become, like, an actor, or, you know, to make it my profession. It's just kind of a hobby and something that is a creative outlet for my otherwise uncreative professional life. You know, like, just, you know, I kind of feel like I have some skills and I'd like to figure out how to use them, you know? Yeah.
Well, and that's what I think one of the cool things that is about exploring those kinds of hobbies and everything is, because, like, it could start as a hobby, but you have so much freedom to make it, like, more and less important in your life. Like, yeah, maybe I'll change my mind one day and I'll really want to go for it. You know, you have that option. Or maybe I'll just peter out and stop doing it. Like, you have that option. But it's not like anything you have to decide you want to go balls to the walls with at any given time.
There's no pressure to.
Right.
Yeah. No, I like keeping it, like, no pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it, for sure. And I kind of wish that I'd looked at life that way when I was, like, 20 in college and, like, you know, because when you're that age and like choosing a major and choosing what you're going to do with your life, everything seems so important and so like, you know, will you make this decision?
This is going to be forever.
Like, yeah.
What I do now is
right.
How everything's going to be.
Yeah. And like 20 years later, you're like, nope. Uh-uh.
Yeah. You're not working
the way it's going to be at all.
Related whatsoever.
No, I did not go to MFA school and become a novelist.
Yeah.
Right. You know, yeah.
The thing I like about also with various genres of entertainment is, while it can definitely, the thing I have to keep telling myself anyway, is while it can definitely help to have an MFA and to have gone to like Yale School of Drama, I mean, obviously all those things are mm-hmm. are yeah. a huge leg up. To your point, you were talking about how like your brother-in-law, it sounds like he's been training his whole life to sort of be an actor, and like, it's not a, first of all, it's a lot of money for not a necessarily guaranteed thing. And, you know, MFAs and BFAs and things like that are so specific that when you're in the interim phase of getting to that point, like, can you get a job with those? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's that whole thing. But also, like, you need certain degrees to become a physicist. You need certain degrees yeah. to become a lawyer. Right. You need certain degrees. I mean, you got a specific degree in, like, a library degree, correct?
Yeah, my master's is in library
exactly.
science.
Exactly. So, like, yeah. there are specific degrees you need to, like, do things and like entertainment.
Yeah. Well, they require mm-hmm. like a specific skill set.
Right.
Would you right?
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to like entertainment or I think writing and stuff, it's like, yeah, you can learn very valuable skills and you can help hone what you got, but it's almost just more important to do it. Like,
yeah.
it's more important that you're just doing it and you're getting
totally.
Feedback that way as opposed to like reading out of a textbook. It's not to say that it's bad to do that. But it's not always necessary. Like, I feel like everybody's different. And
I mean, in some ways,
there's benefits to have both ways.
For people like us, yep. if we ever do want to become famous at it, it's kind of nice because we didn't waste our time doing it. You know, we can jump the line. We can jump
yeah.
the line if we have yeah. talent. You know what I mean? Like, if you're
yeah.
if you have natural ability, you can jump the line. It's got to suck for people who spent $50,000 a year to go to Yale drama school.
Well,
and, you know,
they're gonna have
someone's jumping the fucking line. But I feel like,
something.
I mean, that's kind of the risk you take with choosing that lifestyle, too. And that's,
yeah,
that's kind
sure.
of like, I go back and forth all the time because you're around so many people here who, like, fucking, you know, went to, like, some of the top film schools in the country, like USC mm-hmm. and LMU and all that stuff. And I'm like, ah, fuck, should I go to film school? Will that give me a leg up? But really, like, I mean, if I just work really hard and have natural ability, I mean, that's like sports, too, right? Like, you know, you just... It really,
you gotta practice. You just gotta
yeah,
do
it.
Yeah.
And put yourself out there. And I think the really important part that it, if anything, is just as important as doing it, is being able to get quality critiques and those kind of things, and being able to like work with what you your feedback.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing it but you don't give a shit what
yeah.
anyone thinks to a point, like, then you're not gonna get better. But if you're doing it and you're like really taking notes and, you know, being self-aware and whatnot, what's working and what's not working, that's not to say listen to every single criticism you get and then fold, like,
yeah,
having a general idea of like where you actually are as compared to other people, or, you know, what you're doing and what you could be doing better and that kind of a thing.
Camille, mm-hmm. I don't know, as an only child, do you find, are you pretty good with feedback and criticism, or is it
no,
no?
Oh my god, no. No, I don't like criticism.
Really? Okay.
Like, yeah, like, we have, I mean, this isn't criticism, but we do, like, we do reviews at work twice a year, and we have our mid-year reviews coming up, and like, I know, again, this is an overthinking thing, I know nothing bad's gonna happen. I know that my boss isn't gonna be like, you really suck at this, but like, I'm prepared for that. I'm prepared for her to tell me that I suck at my job, and, you know, you haven't accomplished anything in the first half of the year, and I know that's unrealistic and it's not gonna happen, but like, yeah, no, I don't take criticism.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
I'm very sensitive.
And that's, I get that too. I totally get that, because that's the thing for me.
Yeah.
It's like, I think I've hit a point where I can get it, but you have to give it to me a certain way. You know what I mean? Like,
I
can take it, but if you're just like very blunt about it, then I'm like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear it if you're not even going to try to, like, you know, gently.
My whole college career has been like all about critiques. So it started with like a fine art bachelor's, and then design masters. And it was just oh God, like I want to say it gets easier and sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. I'm like, I feel like maybe I should be better at it, but yeah. As long as it doesn't feel like, especially when it comes to like art and stuff, it's sometimes it's hard to not feel like it's a personal, you know, like yeah. Depending on what you're doing, it's hard
that's
for
you.
It not to be personal. Yeah, because you're putting yourself out there. So like when it comes to comedy or something, if someone like, you know, their critique is like, oh, you know, you should try to like change the wording of this or add that, like that feels fine. But if they're like, oh man, you're just kind of like, you like if they start talking about like maybe like my behavior or something, or like some kind of like ism that I, you know, like you do this too much, you look really nervous, you look, and I'm like, I don't know how to fix
yes
this.
That's me, like
I can't,
yeah,
I hate it like when it's a critique on something, I
when
can't,
someone
don't
tells
know how
you like
change.
You have too many fingers, it's just like I don't know what to do, like
I can't change
yeah,
that,
get rid of it,
yeah,
help,
I
don't
could
know.
Cut it off, but I don't know,
I'm like
that's the best idea. Hey, Camilla, I know, is your guys' preterm bowling thing coming up? Do you want to promote that at all?
No. Well, it actually, we did it like last Thursday. And I think we're done. Yeah, I think fundraising has ended, but we raised $75,000
yes!
for the preterm access fund.
Okay.
So it's a fund that helps preterm patients who are coming to the clinic for abortion services to subsidize their abortion care.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, $75,000 is a good amount of money. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Especially the way Ohio's stupid.
Yeah, I know.
You're very good at recruiting fundraising, because she posted something really funny. What were you doing? Oh, you're spray painting things for people who are donating.
Well, yeah, so it's a bowl-a-thon, right? So like the trophies we give to people are spray painted bowling pins, and I was in charge of that this year. I had I overthought and overbought spray paint, so I had like all of the, I still have all of this like gold and purple glittery spray paint in my garage, and I was like, well, I'm really desperate for people to give me money now. Like towards the end, I get more like, oh my God, gotta push to the next level. So I put out a plea on Facebook and Instagram for people to donate, and if they donated, I would spray paint something for them. So nice. I trapped Jess into donating. She commented, she was like, oh my God, this is so funny, I love it. And I was like, do you love abortion access?
And I was like, yeah, you so, got me.
Yeah, but yeah, also,
sucker.
You got me.
So I'm going to be spray painting something for you, Jess.
Yeah, I'm coming home next weekend, so we'll have to figure out when we can
get.
That's what's so fun. So I'm watching Zoe now for my my adopted sister, Jess. She's in L.A. this week, and on Thursday, she's coming back. And then Jess, who lives in LA, is coming here.
Oh,
like
the
day after.
From LA. You're getting a fresh shipment of Jesses from LA.
Yeah, all these Jesses and LAs and
things. Liz, are you in Cleveland?
Yep.
Okay.
Are you in Cleveland?
Yep. Cleveland Heights.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
Yep.
Yeah, we got east side and west side today.
Uh-oh.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, we don't have to. I'm not a native, so it seems stupid to me. But
okay, yeah, that helps. That helps it. See, yeah. And then we really don't have to fight, because I'm from the west side too.
Got it.
I was just talking about I met a bunch of my boyfriend's friends for the first time last night. Everyone was super nice and super sweet, and I got to see some yearbook pictures of him. And you've never seen him so little.
He's a big. So the thing you need to know about her boyfriend is he's a big fucking dude. So the fact that she sees
he's like 6'2" and stuff, and he's like, I've never seen him without facial hair. He's good.
Oh,
man. He's talking about. Can't remember what's so we were talking about like where people are from, and we're talking about like when you say somebody's from Cleveland and then you're like, oh, whereabouts, and they're like Avon Lake, and you're like, fuck yourself, like no, you're
not from Cleveland.
I said I was from Cleveland, so you know what I'm talking, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
something when you say it to somebody who's not from around here at all, like yeah, say Cleveland, because the fuck they know where Grafton is. That doesn't make sense. But if I'm telling you I'm also from Cleveland, we were all like in the driveway being like, right? Right? Like,
no, literally.
If you don't know, you don't know. But I told you I'm also from Cleveland. You can get more specific.
No, literally, like, there's a woman I work with who's like, I'm from Cleveland. And I was like, where? And she was like, Grafton. And I was like, I don't know where that is. Because I only lived in Cleveland for, like, 10 years. And I still don't know where all the fucking, like, suburbs are. And I was like, oh, okay, right. Grafton.
That's
Grafton
not even a suburb. Like, yeah.
Is there a social media that anyone can follow for preterm? Is there, like, a site or anything?
They're on Facebook. They have an Instagram, but I can't remember what the handle is. It's probably like Preterm Ohio or something.
Google Preterm Ohio. Follow that on whatever social media. Is there anything else you have that you want people to know about, promote, anything like that?
No.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Awesome.
There's nothing else
she's
going
an
on
enigma,
in my life.
I love it. Mystery lady.
I mean, I guess my social media, if you would like to see my Charlottes, it's like if people hashtag or see pictures of shit in my garden.
Yeah.
My Instagram is on horizons. And my Twitter is, I don't use Twitter as much as I used to. I just do threaded tweets now when I find something really special to complain about.
Yeah.
But my Twitter handle is always bridesmaid, and I can't remember how I spell it. I think it's A-L-W-Y-S-A, bridesmd, because you used to not be able to put a lot of characters in your Twitter name. So sometimes I'm funny on Twitter.
She's real funny. She's real funny on Twitter. No, you have good your rant threads. I live for your rant threads. Those are always really good.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm usually very angry when I post them.
So. Yeah, they're like... I someday aspire to have such good rant threads.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they're very
good.
They're very good.
Set your sights higher.
Yeah. Try harder, lady. Have higher standards.
Come on, Jess.
Liz, is there anything you want to promote on social media?
I don't know. I have that Instagram. I made that post a couple
Elizabeth
weeks ago.
Seaman, if you want to see her post about carrot pants or carrots shaped like pants.
I found a carrot in my lunch. It was a baby carrot. It looked like it was in the shape of pants.
Yeah.
Carrot pants. Mm.
Wow.
Look just like pants.
Either Elizabeth, I think it's maybe Elizabeth C. Seaman on Instagram.
I think it's just Elizabeth Seaman, actually.
All right, then maybe it's that.
Yeah.
Let's say it's yes. Nice. Jess would know better than
it's
me.
It's nice and easy. Well, because I remember when you finally posted carrot pants, I was like, oh, it's just Elizabeth Seaman. Like, that's easy. Like, you know, as long as you know how to spell it the right way and not like the bodily fluid, it's fine.
S-E-M-A-N.
Yes, then it's fine.
Singular.
Singular semen.
Singular.
Seaman.
Bodily fluid.
Seaman. We have SX1 Entertainment at SX1 Entertainment on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Our next showcase that I always promote is Couch Gags at Skidmark Garage, 7 p.m., May 19th. Free admission. Bring your own booze. Bring your own dogs. I want to thank OK Pants for doing our logo and Above Below Entertainment for being our network. And I especially want to thank Camilla Grigsby for being our guest today. You are awesome.
Thank you so much. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're super
fun. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.